Case number 14-3037, United States of America v. Harold Delonte Castle, appellant. Mr. Axon for the appellant, Mr. Malone for the appellee.
Morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Tony Axon representing the appellant, Harold Castle, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The evidence in this case should have been suppressed because at the moment the police officers seized Mr. Castle, they did not have reasonable articulable suspicion that the criminal activity was afoot. Mr. Castle was seized at the moment he submitted to the officer's command that he show his hands. That's Officer Ozak. And that submission to the show of authority was based on the information that the officer had at the time, that Mr. Castle had walked quickly or was walking quickly when the officer first saw him. He was in a high drug area, and he had bent near the U-Haul truck.
Now, where did you argue below that it was the order to show his hands by itself, that alone was the seizure?
I'm not sure that we argued that alone was the seizure, but we argued that was the seizure in the argument. If the court will allow me a moment, I cited in my reply brief, I cited the exact...
I like what you said, and it was always in combination with the tap on the arm and hold a sec. I didn't see you breaking out just the order to show hands by itself as the seizure apart from the touch on the arm and hold a sec.
Yes, I understand. I think that this court... In Bailey, I believe, held that in the Fourth Amendment context, we understand that we have to specifically argue, but the argument here is that the officers did not have reasonable articulable suspicion. So the question is whether the court was aware of the specific legal argument that we were making. The court was not unaware, was not caught off guard, it's not as though there were not facts before the court for the court to reach the right decision.
Although I guess it would be a bit unusual if your client thought he was seized at that moment, you would have told the court. And if he didn't think he was seized, you weren't telling the court that that's when he thought he was seized. It's a bit much for the court to go, oh, actually, you were seized earlier than you thought you were, since the whole test focuses on whether the individual thought they were at liberty to go.
Well, I think I take issue as to whether that's what the test is. The test is when did the individual submit to the show of authority? And we know that the first show of authority is when the officer says, show me your hands. That wasn't something that the district court could not ascertain for itself.
So every submission to a show of authority by a police officer constitutes a seizure?
Yes.
So if you're walking down the sidewalk and there's something going on, a police officer is telling everybody, walk over there, keep on moving. All those people have been seized when they walk over there and keep on moving?
I'm not sure that that's a submission to a show of authority so much as following the instructions of the police officer. Submission to a show of authority is actually recognizing the authority of the officer and I guess stopping what you were doing. An officer directing a crowd of people.
Well, they stop walking where they are and they walk somewhere else.
The officer hasn't taken any control of anybody.
It redirected their path. I prefer to walk on the sunny side of the sidewalk, but now I have to walk over on the shady side of the street.
Well, I guess the question would be, if you stayed on the other side, would that be your right? And I think that there are cases that say where the officer doesn't have reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot, you don't have to obey that command. Just because officers are people in our society that enforce the law doesn't mean that every command that they make is something that we have to obey. So in that situation, I think if you stayed on the wrong side of the street and the officers...
You cannot be in any show of authority as a seizure. that has to be something that restricts your ability to move or elsewhere. What is the, if suppose there's no seizure until there was a tap on the shoulder, then what is your position?
I'd still say that the officers didn't have reasonable articulable suspicion to.
What's different? What more information did the officer have between the time of show me your hands and tapping on your shoulder?
Well, I believe Officer Olczak.
And stop tapping his shoulder and stopping him.
Testified that in that range he recognized Mr. Castle as Mr. Castle and somebody that he had previously had contacts with. So
you would concede that once he recognized Mr. Castle, then it was a legitimate Terry stop?
No, I don't concede that. While he recognized Mr. Castle and knew Mr. Castle from prior contacts, there's still not any, the record still doesn't reflect any articulable reason that the officer believes criminal activity is afoot. I do recognize that because Mr. Castle has been involved in crimes before, the officers come closer, but
he walks down a dark alley, he leans over and drops something behind a dumpster, right?
No, I disagree with that. That is not what the record reflects.
Leans over and apparently drops something, doesn't he?
I don't think the record
even
reflects that.
His leg goes up like a, it reminded me of a whooping crane. His leg goes up, and that must mean he's dropping something. Doesn't it look like that?
What I'll say is that the district court factual finding on that issue was that the police officers didn't know. And didn't know what happened
but
back
was it,
there.
Was
they
it enough to be suspicious? Was it enough to be suspicious?
It may make you curious, but.
Well, wait a minute. If you combine that with the recognition.
The recognition of Mr. Castle as someone who's been involved in criminal activity before.
And is in a high crime area.
And is in a high crime area. And every
and
time
walks he, down a black alley.
And every time he bends over, he is subject to a
not
stop.
Bending over. He's bending over like he's dropping something behind something.
Andy had a history of destroying evidence when he spotted the police.
He also had a history of flight, and he walks directly to the officers, but.
After he goes behind the U-Haul, bends over in an odd position.
He does bend over, but that's all we know about what takes place back there. He could bend over.
Was that a blind alley? Could he have gone the other direction?
He could have not come back out to
no,
the police
No, but
officers.
He couldn't go any other direction. That was an end of an alley.
No, he
could have gone the other way.
Yes, there's no fence in the back of this yard. And the police officers refer to it as an alley, but it's actually just the side yard of the house.
So he could have gone the other way. That's
right. So he could have walked back there and continued to walk out the back to another street, to another part of the city. But that's not what happened. And I have to vigorously dispute that he dropped something. We don't know that he dropped.
No, you're right. You can't. It's not established he dropped something, but it looked like he dropped something, doesn't it?
It looks like he bends, and without the officer saying, well, in my experience, when someone goes to that location or when someone's back there and bends like that, I believe that they drop. In this case, you had the officers almost say the exact opposite. I did not see him put anything down. I didn't see him pick anything. I didn't see anything in his hands. There's no indicia of criminal activity. As I walked over here this morning, I bent to touch something on my shoe.
No, but he said, to be fair, he was walking. They recognize the police. He goes down the alley, bends, and then comes back. So he made a special trip to go behind the U-Haul and then came back. Isn't it significant that, in fact, he had that little detour and then came back?
I think if...
Again, given his history of destroying evidence.
I think if he indeed recognized the police, it becomes more problematic for him. But again, the record does not reflect that at any point he recognized the police or did anything in response to the police.
The police thought he recognized them.
Right, but that's an unparticularized hunch. That is nothing. They have to articulate why they think that.
We're looking at what information they had, whether they had a reasonable suspicion. So they turn on a road. They believe that he recognizes them as police officers, maybe not as individuals, but as police officers, and decides then to go back behind the U-Haul, bend over, and then come back out. It wasn't like he was walking in that direction. He didn't keep going. He went there solely to go behind the U-Haul and bend, for whatever that reason was, and come back out.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The testimony is that there is no testimony that he changed direction. And there is no evidence that he ever recognized the police. So that's something else that
He went to the U-Haul and then came right back on the exact same path. So that's a detour. Right. People don't normally walk to U-Hauls and back, do they, in the middle of the night? Or late evening?
Well, what I'd say to that is the defendant does not have to explain his actions in any way. The officers, the government, has to explain why that is criminal. It may make you curious, but it is not in and of itself criminal to walk behind unless the officers add something more. The government did not carry their burden to have the officers establish why that creates criminal suspicion.
Do they have to suspect a crime was committed, or can they suspect that evidence was being hidden or destroyed?
Hidden or destroyed is if there's a crime. So I view those two statements as the question is one and the same.
Mm-hmm. Counsel, I'm a little curious about the significant amount of drugs that was found in the container behind the dumpster. If that had been found before there was a seizure, would it have clearly been articulate suspicion?
Yes.
No question, right? So is it not, it was found afterwards, right?
That's correct.
If it had been found and your client had walked away, the police would certainly have had grounds to stop him walking down the street, right?
Yes.
So I'm a little curious why the government can't argue that it inevitably would have been a stop anyway. I think the government makes that argument in a brief. Not very strongly, but they suggest it.
That's correct, but the evidence that I'm seeking to suppress is evidence that is recovered before. Fourth Amendment analysis always turns on timing. It always turns on what happens first. If the government has the evidence that the defendant is seeking to suppress before anything occurs, then we never have a Fourth Amendment.
But if it had inevitably been found anyway,
right?
Doesn't that undermine your position?
It would undermine my position if I was seeking to suppress what is back at the van, back at the truck. But in this intervening time is when Officer Mosley witnesses Mr. Castle take the small vial out of his glove while he is seized, before this back here is discovered. So it is not, I have to revise my earlier statement. I'm not sure that, I still agree that they could have seized Mr. Castle, but if he had gone on his way and when they seized him, not had this small vial on him, we don't know what would have happened in the interim.
You wouldn't have had to have a small vial to seize him.
That's all I'm seeking to suppress. That's what we sought to suppress. So
I see your point. But if the police had caught up to him, wouldn't say, oh my gosh, look what we found, this enormous amount of drugs. They could have seized him at that point, of course, searched him.
Right, all of that is supposition, and
No, but it's the inevitable consequence. What is the doctrine?
But it's not the inevitable discovery doctrine.
Yeah.
But it's not inevitable if Mr. Castle goes on his way. Maybe he goes into a house. Maybe he takes off his coat. Maybe he takes off his mittens. At that point, we don't know that it's inevitable that they discover what is on him, because he has left the scene. Now,
I see your argument.
Does the record show, it was a little unclear to me how much time elapsed between when he said, hold on a sec, and when the officer found the large amount of PCP behind the U-Haul truck?
I think the record is clear enough at the end, or close to the end of, I think, Officer Mosley's testimony. We know that Officer Mosley, but it could be Olzak, says it was 20 minutes from the time we initially encountered Mr. Castle, and we called for transport after finding this bottle.
Yeah, but so, he said it was Officer Mosley, but he said, I didn't want to arrest him right away, because it was at that point it was one police officer and two individuals, and he was nervous about trying to effectuate an arrest until more police officers came. So that's a different measure of time than the one I was inquiring about. Maybe the record just doesn't say. I'm interested in, there's the moment when Officer Olzak and your client intersect in the alley, and he touches him on the bicep and says, hold on a sec, and then runs back, the officer runs back behind the U-Haul and sees the PCP bottle. Walking towards Mr. Mosley.
He testifies that he goes back there to look. Mm-hmm. His flashlight goes out. Mm-hmm. He has to call for another officer. He has to wait for that other officer to arrive. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, Mr. Castle is seated over here on the curb.
And do we know when that other officer arrived? How much time that was? And do we know that he didn't see anything? He didn't see the PCP until that other officer with the flashlight showed up?
We do know that he did not see the PCP until the other officer arrived, because he says that the other officer is the one that finds the PCP.
Got it. And then,
we know that Mosley, I'm fairly certain it's Mosley, says that he doesn't know what was going on over there, but when they came back to him and said, we have this PCP, is when they called for transport. Mm-hmm. So Mosley, before they call for transport, another officer has already arrived to help Mosley put Mr. Castle in handcuffs. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's an assumption that it was 20 minutes, because they find the big bottle and say, we found the big bottle, everything that has taken place with Mosley is complete.
Right, so the record doesn't show a shorter time.
The little bottle is complete.
Okay, so the record doesn't show any shorter time.
No.
Incidentally, counsel, is it your position that the district judge finding on one issue was clearly erroneous? That is to say that your client was walking away after seeing a car. Your argument is there's no evidence to support that proposition?
That is correct.
Your contention is the district judge's finding on that is clearly erroneous?
It is clearly erroneous. The district judge found it was not unreasonable. I wouldn't even say it's a very strong finding by the district court. The district judge says it's not unreasonable for officers to believe that the defendant was walking quickly to evade them.
Which means
that's not walking away.
Walking quickly, that's true. But the key is whether there's a response to seeing the car as a police car.
Well, we know from Officer Mosley that he says, I immediately turned the corner and saw two people walking quickly. And I nudged my partner, Officer Olzak, and said, look at the two speedwalkers. And we know that this is at the top of Yuma, a full city block. A city block is a quarter of a mile. I realize that's not in the record, but...
Oh, well, if it's not in the record, we can't look at it.
I'm sorry.
What's in the record? The question was whether the district judge could infer from the evidence that your clients walk fast after seeing, in response to seeing the police car.
I don't think there is the slightest shred of evidence that would allow such an inference.
What about Mr. Olczak or Officer Olczak's statement on page 22 of the transcript that they were, quote, walking faster than a normal pace when they made us out, end quote? So it sounds like Officer Olczak and Mosley just had different views on this.
I think if you made us out. When they made us out, he doesn't say they started walking.
But isn't it ambiguous?
Walking faster than a normal pace when they made us out, right.
It's ambiguous as to whether or not that statement is a response to seeing us or was the status when we turned whether or not they saw us.
I agree.
So if it's ambiguous, why can't the district judge's finding be accepted under the limited review we have?
Because on cross-examination, when he clarified that statement, he said he had no evidence that they made him out.
That's what I thought your response
would
be.
It doesn't.
I'll ask counsel for the other side on that.
I see that I've exceeded my time.
We'll give you a couple minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Ryan Malone for the United States.
May I go right to that last point? Why isn't the district judge's finding on that clearly erroneous?
It's not clearly erroneous.
Why is it not? Well, particularly when on cross-examination, the officer said, I can't say that they walked fast in response to our car. In other words, something to that word, to that effect.
Well, Your Honor, he also testified to page 60 that he thought they knew we were the police when we first pulled into that block. There was evidence.
Whose women? Say that again. What
Officer Olczak testified.
What's the testimony exactly?
He says, and I'm quoting here, I think they knew we were the police when we first pulled into the block. And the evidence for that, and this is very similar to the evidence in the Edmonds case, where they were also driving an unmarked vehicle, but it was a vehicle that was routinely used to patrol that area. And quite routinely in this case, up to five times a week.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to back you up, but what page did you say that statement?
It was on page 60, Your Honor, of the...
60
of the suppression hearing on June 3rd.
Mm-hmm. Was that in your brief?
I don't know if that quote is in our brief, Your Honor.
It would have been helpful.
I think there is other extensive evidence.
Yeah, I know, but that quote, which is useful, was not in your brief. Not that I remembered.
I don't think that quote is in our brief, Your Honor.
So what do we do with the person who wrote the brief? No, I'm teasing. Go ahead.
Your Honor, I think that the evidence, like in Edmonds, supports an inference. And it's certainly not a clearly erroneous finding by the judge.
Yeah, well, that is a significant alteration in my conclusion. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I
wish I'd been in the brief.
This car was routinely used to patrol the block.
No,
it was a distinctive car.
Yeah, no, I
think there's a common sense aspect to this, too, which is that individuals who are standing on the street would often see a car before the people in the car see them. And the fact is, the manner in which these individuals were walking, you know, putting yourselves in the shoes of these experienced police officers, they were walking in a suspicious enough manner that at that moment, Officer Mosley turned to Officer Olczak and said, look at those fast walkers. He saw them. They weren't walking just in a normal, quick fashion. They were walking enough that it elicited suspicion. And then when you take the totality of the circumstances, as you should under our visu, you should look at where they were walking from. Now, this is not a case where there are blithe, general assertions about the neighborhood being a high crime area. We're talking about a specific building, 133 Yuma Street, which the district court made a factual finding, a very specific factual finding, that's a building where men stand outside and sell PCP. Not just drug activity, and not just any drug, but PCP. And not just that block, but that building.
You're saying the facts in Edmonds are the same? They're not the same.
The
finding there was his eyes got pretty big, and he immediately pivoted and turned away and began to walk rapidly toward the van. There was a clear identification, there was clear testimony indicating that the defendants had spotted the police and reacted. There is no testimony here to that effect, and indeed that when pressed on cross-examination, the officer said, we really don't have a basis for saying that. And all you're saying is if there's a police car in a high-crime area, we can always surmise that if someone's walking fast, they must be trying to escape. That's silly. That's just a silly argument. Do you realize the reach of that argument?
Your Honor, and that's not our argument, of course. This is not
the,
just
I think
people
Judge Silverman asked the right question. You have no evidence to support. There are other pieces of the case, but with respect to them walking quickly, you know, I could make the argument that people in high-crime areas always walk quickly. It's just safer to walk quickly. I don't know what it means, but there's nothing to indicate they were reacting to police officers. And a police officer just saying, well, I know I'm a police officer, they're probably responding to me with nothing more. That's silly.
Your Honor, I understand your point, but I think that that is...
I just wanted to clarify. Did Officer Olczak retract his statement explicitly?
No, Your Honor. I don't think he did retract his statement.
It's Mr. Mosley who was the one who said, at least on cross-examination, that I didn't know they could have been walking fast before. They were already walking fast when we turned the corner, but I wasn't clear. I wasn't
Correct.
Clear. Maybe counsel.
I believe that is Officer Mosley who retracted that statement. I don't know that Officer Olczak retracted that at all. He was very confident that they had made out the police.
Yeah, but it was based on nothing.
Well, Your Honor, it wasn't based
it's
on nothing.
It's not like Edmonds. I mean, Edmonds is a great case if you have the same facts, but you don't have those facts.
Your Honor, I disagree with you.
His eyes got pretty big and he immediately pivoted and turned away and he began to walk rapidly toward the van? Those are your facts?
No, Your Honor. And that specific point, I think Edmonds is quite clear on the timing. But I think Your Honor's question implies is the sort of divide and conquer analysis that the Supreme Court has forbidden in our visor. I think you have to look at the totality of the circumstances here. In Edmonds, the companion of the defendant was walking to a car in a parking lot. In this case, the people were walking from a known PCP dealing house to an abandoned property.
No, but we're talking about whether the police will recognize. That's the point Edmonds made. Your so-called furtive gestures are only significant if they were undertaken in response to police presence.
Yes.
And there has to be evidence to support that.
Yes.
And there's nothing to indicate that other than the officer saying, well, I'm an officer and we turned the corner.
Well, I don't agree, Your Honor.
Evidence that they're reacting to the officers?
I think in Edmonds, it's not just the timing, and I agree that your Honor's describing the facts in Edmonds correctly, but there was also evidence in Edmonds that the car had been recognized, that this was an unmarked car that was routinely used to patrol the area, and the
right.
court took that into account.
Yeah, but we have no evidence here that the car was recognized.
We have evidence that supports an inference that it was recognized because it was routinely, it was a distinctive vehicle and it was used to routinely patrol. And that was also.
Double, triple, I just read an article on triple, quadruple inferences and, you know, that's.
Well, I thought they testified that they thought they actually had the only Dodge Ram in town. I'm not sure that's true, but that it was a very rare car, at least in that
yes.
area. It was a very distinctive vehicle.
Yes,
they
sure.
wonder were there any other vehicles like that in this area.
Yes, and that's
a 75. Go back to that testimony you said that's not in the brief again. Repeat that. Is that in response to Judge Edwards' point? I'm not sure.
Well, Your Honor.
And this is which officer, Olczak?
Olczak, Your Honor.
And what does he say?
He said specifically, and I'm quoting here, I think they knew we were the police when we first pulled into the block.
That's it.
What is the reason for that?
There isn't any.
Well,
the reason he gave was his
knowledge that the car
had
been
recognized. Yeah, his experience. It's a high-crime area, so I think they knew we were police. We can't have gone that far. It just makes no sense.
No, but he says our vehicle. Is there anything to indicate that our vehicle, we pull in there almost on a daily basis, it's our vehicle, it's a Dodge Ram. And there's testimony about how rare Dodge Rams are in that
and
area.
Also,
why did these guys keep going in the alley if they felt they had been spotted? Or that they had spotted? Why would they come back to the police, so to speak? If they were fleeing, why wouldn't they just keep fleeing through this alley? If they were, your whole argument is they were fleeing because they had spotted the police.
No,
well,
Your
what
Honor,
they did was
not
consistent.
Our argument is not that they were fleeing. Our argument is not that they were fleeing.
Okay, so what is
our argument is that they proceeded to make, well, let's talk about what they did when they got to the property, because there are two individuals, both of whom acted very suspiciously and not consistently with someone, as the appellant suggests, visiting a friend at the house or entering their own home. Mr. Banks stops and pretends to urinate in the front yard. And there's testimony that he wasn't even urinating, he was pretending to urinate. That's at page 58 of the suppression hearing. Mr. Castle, the appellant, proceeds into this cut or alley behind an abandoned truck and makes very suspicious gestures. Now, I agree the police don't know exactly what he's doing. He could be retrieving a weapon.
Well, then why are they suspicious if we don't know what I don't know what to make of the gestures that are described. Why are they suspicious?
I think, again, the analysis here should be putting yourself in the shoes of an experienced police officer.
Yeah, I'm trying.
And so someone leaving 133 Yuma, a known drug house, and proceeding to an abandoned house across the street, who then tries to hide himself from view, clearly, going behind the truck, and bends over as if he's placing something there or picking something up. They don't know quite what he's doing, but it's so suspicious to Officer Olsak at the moment that he jumps out of the car and starts running to that very spot, to the very spot where he sees the defendant, the appellant, bending over. Now, I don't think that there's any case that says the police have to know what the furtive gesture is. You know, if you look at Edmonds, the gesture there, Your Honor, is actually very similar to the gesture here. They see the defendant sort of going under the dashboard and coming back up. It turned out he was putting a gun or other contraband under the seat. But the police don't have to know that. The standard is there a suspicion that there's crime afoot? Mm-hmm. And that's considerably less than preponderance of the evidence, the courts have said. So I don't think they have to know. Now, it's true that the evidence is not clear that these people were fast walking in response to the police coming up.
That's an understatement.
Okay. But I think there's a very reasonable inference that they were, based on the recognition of the car, which was well established.
If you lose on that point, there's no evidence that the two responded to the police. Is that the end of your case?
No, Your Honor, because these facts have to be taken in totality. And
well,
it's not just
minute,
the timing.
Wait a minute. If there's no evidence that they responded to the case, ever responded to the police, then the walking behind the dumpster is not of any significance.
I thought you were referring to the walking quickly, Your Honor. I think if you were to conclude that the furtive gestures behind the truck in response, then I think that's a problem for our case.
Yes, that is.
But I don't think that's a fair inference from the facts.
There has to be, for your case, a legitimate finding that the two responded to seeing the police car as police. Without that, you have no case.
If none of their actions were taken in response.
No. Just respond it. If you do not have that, you lose the case.
I'm confused about what you mean by that. I'm sorry.
That, if there is no legitimate finding that they responded to the car coming up as police, that there's no legitimate finding that they recognized the police car when they took further action, that's the end of your case.
No, I don't think that's correct.
Well, tell me how.
I think that, imagine an observation post on the street that's clearly, clearly secreted.
So if the police are watching from binoculars from a house across the street, and they see somebody walk down the alley, bend over, and walk back.
Well,
enough to jump out.
No, but there was more to it than that. Then the companion also pretends to urinate in the front yard, and they're coming from a known drug house. Yeah,
anybody coming from a known drug house can be stopped.
No, Your Honor, there could be an innocent explanation for that. But taken together, we're taking these facts separately.
I thought there's some debate about whether the instant they turned on the street and saw them walking fast, whether that was in response to the police, and that's where the debate was. But I thought there was no dispute that, because the police keep coming down the street, so that by the time he's going in the alley, he knows it's a police car.
Yes,
is there any dispute about
correct.
That?
No.
That's what sends him into the alley to the U-Haul.
I don't think there could be any serious dispute that the...
Or that would certainly be a reasonable inference.
Correct.
You don't think there can be any serious dispute? Why now?
That
based on evidence.
Well, at that point, The car was so close to them.
Yeah.
And the fact that the police officer at that point was actually getting out of the car, they'd stopped the car.
Oh, so you're saying at the point when the police officer got out of the car.
I think there's a certain point where it's not likely that the people were not recognizing the officers. They were wearing tactical vests that said police. So it was a distinctive car, but they also were in uniform.
Right? Yeah, when they got out of the car.
Depends on them getting out.
They were going to get out. Yeah.
I think Judge Edwards and I are saying the same thing.
Right.
The key question is whether they recognize the car as a police car and altered their behavior because of that.
I took Judge Millett's question to be whether there's any inference possible that the furtive movements behind the truck.
By themselves?
Just taking those. We're not in response to the police, and I think they were in response.
Heading down the alley and then going to the
yes,
mall.
Yes, I think that was clearly in response to the police presence.
Okay, that's your point.
So the evidence was that these police were there in this unique car almost daily, and that Mr. Castle had been there frequently before and had encountered these police frequently. So even if they didn't walk fast when they first turned the corner on the end of the block, as they approached, he would have recognized the vehicle.
Yes. I think that is at least a fair inference from the facts, and certainly not a clearly erroneous finding by the judge.
Incidentally, what happened with respect to the large bit of drugs behind the dumpster? Was the defendant ever charged with possession of those?
Yes, Your Honor. The defendant was convicted on a lesser included offense of possession with intent to distribute a detectable amount of PCP. The initial charge, I think, was possession with intent to distribute 100 grams or more.
I see. So,
but that was the small vial, wasn't it? I'm sorry. I thought his conviction was based on the small vial that was found during the search of his body, and he wasn't convicted of...
Was the big vial introduced in evidence?
Oh, they were both introduced in evidence and tied to him?
Yes, they were both introduced in evidence.
Now, what about the question I asked at the outset, the inevitable discovery? What is your position on that?
Well, I think that...
It was only a suggestion of that in a brief.
I think that the way that the issue is presented here, where the appellant is only seeking to suppress the small vial and statements, I don't think that is necessarily covered by the inevitable discovery.
That's what I was afraid of, yes.
The large vial, they were going to find that no matter what happened with Mr. Castle. It was just a matter of getting the flashlight.
But even if that's true... That doesn't justify the motion, denial of the suppression.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think that resolves the case.
Right, exactly.
And I would like to say that Judge Millett began the last period of argument by asking about when the seizure happened. I want to talk about that for a second. Even though we believe under Edmonds, the seizure is constitutionally justified even if the seizure begins when he's asked to show his hands. But that was not the argument below. And I would direct Your Honors to page 117, to the quote that immediately precedes the quoted section in the reply brief by appellant. The court, Judge Kessler, says to the parties, I thought we all agreed that the seizure occurs when he sits on the curb. And appellant's counsel says, and I'm quoting here, we would put it when Officer Olsek touches Mr. Castle and said, hold on a second. Now, that's after he's told to show his hands. Appellant's counsel then goes on to conflate the touching with the saying, hold on a second, and then ultimately says there's probably no legal significance between those two things. We think there is some legal significance because in that
Between
the showing of the hands and when off.
You mean taking the hands out of the pocket?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then a few seconds later, or however long it was, when Officer Olsek tapped the appellant and said, hold on a second. Well, the evidence is clear that in that time frame, he recognized Mr. Castle.
Right,
and this is not just, I know who that person is. He had had personal experience in arrests for PCP use and PCP distribution for Mr. Castle. So this was a known offender of the very type of offense that this block and this building is known for.
Well, he'd also known him for destroying evidence when he saw the police, right? He poured a vial of PCP out right in front of the guy once before.
Absolutely. He was not only present there, he used napkins to try to wipe up the PCP. So he was very...
So if the argument had been made the seizure was when he was asked to show his hands, your case would be a lot weaker. That's your concession here, right?
I don't think it's a lot weaker because I think that's the least. I think that's the least factor in our analysis. The recognition. I don't think that's a tremendous additional factor. But
the recognition is a least factor. That's pretty damn important.
Okay,
this guy has been arrested a number of times.
He certainly has, and for this very same offense.
Right.
But we would not concede that simply showing the hands, and I agree with Judge Silberman, I think even the inherent nature of the word seizure implies some restriction on movement. You can imagine a situation where a police officer tells someone to show their hands as they're walking away, and they continue to walk away. There's no way that person has been seized by the police simply because they take their hands out.
Well, but we're at night. We're in an alley. It's just the two of them. It's a confined area. It's dark. One has a gun. One doesn't. One has authority. One doesn't. And he's ordered, show your hands. Now, what's going to happen to him if he doesn't show his hands? I mean, what is Mr. Castle thinking at that moment?
Well, he may think that if he shows his hands, he'll be free to leave. And I think that would not be a seizure.
And if he doesn't show his hands?
He doesn't comply.
Your Honor, it's not a
there's
test
plenty,
of what he thinks.
There's plenty of cases. I mean, your overstatement was a big overstatement. There's no such case where a police makes a command like this, we wouldn't call it a seizure. Sure, there are cases that say that.
And, Your Honor, the
question is whether this one is one of them.
Yes, and I think that there are, in the cases, if I'm thinking of the same cases, those are cases where there are additional factors, such as the policeman pulling his gun and saying, show me your hands, or an additional show of force. And those are the kind of facts that weren't fleshed out at the district court level, because this argument was not even recognized by the district court. District court says, and this is in the appendix, page 46, she takes the appellant's argument to be the seizure happens when he says, hold on a second. And there was no objection to that. Your Honors, if there are no further questions,
thank you.
We would urge you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Mr. Axon, we'll give you 2 minutes. I'm sorry to intrude right away on your 2 minutes, but would you be willing to clarify whether Officer Olczak walked back the testimony about believing that they recognized the car very early when they turned onto the block
yes.
and walked faster?
Yes, I can clarify that. I think the government is mistaken.
Okay.
It is Officer Mosley who is driving. It is Officer Mosley who says, immediately when I turned, I saw two speed walkers. Immediately. He is asked on cross whether he ever saw them walk slowly. Officer Mosley says, I never saw them walk slowly. They were always walking fast from the moment we saw them. It is Officer Mosley who nudges his partner and says, look at the two speedwalkers. His partner is Officer Olczak. Officer Olczak is the officer upon whose testimony the government is relying that I think they made us out. But even that, on cross-examination, he concedes he has no evidence that they made him out.
Well, he says, I suspected that they made us out. He can't read their minds. And then he goes on to talk about the Dodge Ram and the Dodge Ram. He thinks this is the only Dodge Ram in the city, that it's there on the street all the time. They know, everybody there knows their vehicle. And this isn't Mr. Castle's first time on that street either.
Respectfully,
so
Your Honor.
That's evidence for our purposes, even if the officer says that's suspicion for his purposes.
Respectfully, Your Honor, he says that the Dodge Ram is there once a day during an 8-hour shift. He does not say it's distinctive.
No, he said on page 75. That's where he says he thinks it's the only one in the city.
Yes, one Dodge Ram in the city, which I'd submit to the court is patently absurd.
They're almost every day out of 5 days of the week. They know it's the police. They know it's the car. At least once in an 8-hour shift we're there, they know their car. They know our cars. I'm just asking whether that's evidence that we
the
can
type
consider.
Of evidence that I would say that is mm-hmm. unparticularized hunch.
Okay.
It is not based on, he doesn't say, I've spoken to people. He doesn't
Does he also say there's people who will jump out saying, Joe, when they see their vehicles?
But again, this is the Fourth Amendment. This mm-hmm. is an individual right that Mr. Castle possesses. So it would have to be Mr. Castle that knows. I understand the officer's general belief, if it's a patrol car even, maybe officers generally believe that everybody recognizes the patrol car.
Reasonable suspicion turns on the actual subconscious knowledge of the person who stopped?
No, not subconscious, but on.
I thought it turned out Mr. Olczak's, Officer Olczak had a reasonable suspicion.
Right, but he's imputing knowledge to Mr. Castle based on general knowledge in the community, for which he provides no basis. And he's imputing that specific knowledge to Mr. Castle. And the government is asking, based on that inference, for you to further infer that because Mr. Castle was speedwalking, he must have recognized the police.
Take the speedwalking out for a moment, please, counsel. Excuse me for interrupting. Take the speedwalking out. Let's assume that there's no evidence that the two defendants, although I don't know Mosley is still in the case, but let's assume that there's no evidence that the two defendants responded to the police car. If there is no seizure until there's a tapping on the shoulder, do you lose the case?
I think the case becomes problematic if the defendants are responding to the police.
Wait a minute.
I'm sorry.
No, forget that. There's no indication.
No response at all.
No indication that the defendants responded to the police.
No testimony at all. Nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing happens until
All you see is somebody walking down the alley and the whooping crane gesture. Then he walks back and the officer recognizes who he is, thinks about that furtive gesture, realizes that he's a known PCP distributor, and taps him on the shoulder, and that's the first seizure. If that's true, do you lose the case?
No. I realize the court has characterized this bending as a furtive gesture.
No, okay.
And again,
it's just a strange gesture. The point is, at this point, the officers recognize the defendant.
Yes, but they still...
And he has an old record. He walked from that PCP distribution house. They know that. He walked down the alley, looked like he dropped something, and he comes back, and he's tapped on the shoulder and says, stopped. Is your case pretty weak at that point, isn't it? How can you say it's not?
It's certainly weakened.
So everything depends on the seizure being taking your hands out of the pocket.
The problem
with that is it wasn't argued below. How can we say it's clearly erroneous?
Your Honor, I can direct the court to what the government just read, and I'd ask the court to read it. The district court asked, I thought we were in agreement.
What page are you on?
I'm sorry, page 117 of the motion hearing. I thought that the seizure was made when Mr. Castle was told to sit down on the curb. And counsel says, yeah, we would put it slightly earlier, Your Honor. We would put it when Officer Olzak touches Mr. Castle and said, you know, hold on a sec. We would put the seizure slightly before that, before he touches him. That is...
No.
Before the curb, yes.
Okay, can I finish? Because he continues. I'm not sure if it's legally meaningful where it is, but I would say the seizure occurs, I think, under the case law when a police officer tells you to show your hands, stop, or he says, hold on a sec. The defense is required to put their legal basis. We can have more than one legal basis. We're not stuck with only arguing that the seizure occurs at the tap or only arguing that the seizure occurs when show your hands.
Page 118.
Right,
this is next page on 118. This is defense counsel. He says, hold on a sec, grabs him and says, hold on a second, and he touched him, so that's when the seizure occurs on the very next page. You can't...
I agree, but the court is asking me whether we put the district court on notice that we were arguing multiple points in the seizure. And the point that I'm making is the defense... When he says, I think under the case law, when a police officer tells you, show your hands, I understand that that is not, that the court and the government would rather discuss the seizure at the tap. And great advocacy, the defense would have said, no, we're only picking the earliest point in the seizure. But there is no requirement under the Fourth Amendment that we only pick the earliest point. We can say it's either here It's either here or here.
But you didn't even do that, right? Again, on 120, you say the exact same thing. It's the seizures when he's tapped. And the only thing you're referring, that's why I asked you,
because
did you ever distinctly say it by itself? You have a sentence that says, when a police officer tells you, show your hands, comma, stop, which combines
or,
the two.
And he says,
or does the tap. Right. But you show your hands, stop, is how it's described. That's why I said it always seems to be put together. I didn't see any point where it was just either this or this.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. Mm-hmm. Or is disjunctive. And when you read that statement, mm-hmm. when a police officer tells you to show your hands, stop, or he says, hold on a sec, mm-hmm. that would be a seizure.
If he says, show your hands, stop.
It has to have some meaning. He doesn't say, and. He's not combining those things. He's saying, or. And the purpose let me back up. I don't think that the argument is waived. I think this court can still consider the argument even if counsel did not raise it specifically. Mm-hmm. I think.
Where do you get authority for that?
I'd have to say Rule 52 does not. It would be a plain error. I'd say
plain error.
The defense properly, or mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I'm not sure why it would be a waiver, so I'm at a loss to explain why it wouldn't be a waiver. We're assuming that it's automatically waived when we clearly raised the Fourth Amendment, we clearly said they didn't have reasonable articulable suspicion, and although...
Well, I mean, your problem is you have to, the theory of the case has to be raised. That's what we're talking about. The facts are all there, but there are different theories, as you say, that can be raised with reference to a body of facts. And the moving party is required to say, here's the theory of the case, for several reasons. One, so the district court gets a shot at it, and secondly, so the other side gets a shot at it. Otherwise, you're in plain error land. Yes, you are in plain error land with respect to not having raised the theory. The question is whether you forfeited. And if you're in plain error land, you've got a high hill to climb. Yes, you have to raise a theory. That we just demand that. Even in the criminal context, it's a little bit different in the criminal context. It's not enough to say there is a factual record, Your Honors. It's there, and if you all use your ingenuity, you'll be able to figure out stuff and see that you can glean a really good case for us. That's not the way we work. Is justice sometimes done, undone? Yes. But we are beholden to counsel and those who put the record together, and so you've got to show us. I raised it. And the two reasons are the other side has to have a shot at it and the district court should have a shot at it. Otherwise, we're in plain error land.
I understand. I'd submit that page 117... the defendant raised it. I know that the district court's focus was someplace else. I know that the government's focus and that the defense attorney, I can't say it was great advocacy not to bring it back to this initial stop where he says, I think it's earlier, but I think it's fairly raised and the district court could have addressed it. There are not many points in a seizure when you're arguing reasonable articulable suspicion. I do want to just mention one other point in the record that that may help the court decide or understand whether Mr. Castle recognized the police, and it's while he is back at the in what the court is calling the alley, and I apologize, this is not cited in my brief, but Officer Olzak is asked, did defendant
Castle,
I'm sorry, page 64 in the middle, did Defendant Castle notice Officer Olczak? Officer Olczak is being asked this question, and this is chronologically, it's while they are in the alley after Mr. Castle has walked out and shown his hands. And Officer Olczak answers, yes. Question, you agree with that? Yes. I didn't know if he knew me, comma, knew I was an officer. So even at the point that Officer Olczak and
yeah, but the real problem is Olczak recognized him at that point. That's the real problem.
Right, but he's not saying recognize me specifically. He's saying knew I was an officer.
No, you're going I'm going the reverse way. All right, I see your point, Counselor.
So if the government has made a lot out of whether anything was in response to the police.
No, it doesn't matter at that point whether the defendant recognized the officer. The important point is the officer recognizes the defendant.
All right, I think we have your arguments.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.